Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 10th of May. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Tom Williams, and I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And your readers today are Sheila Shepherd.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
Now, we'll start with what's on for the couple of weeks ahead, or the week ahead. At the Chesil Theatre, from the 18th to the 25th of May, you can see A Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams. Tickets can be obtained online at www.chesiltheatre.org.uk, or you can book by phone on 0844 8700 887. That's 0844 8700 887, but a booking fee will be charged. The Winchester Operatic Society is on stage at the Theatre Royal from Tuesday the 14th to Saturday the 18th of May with a modern musical, Billy, adapted from the play Billy Liar. And the box office number for the Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Or on Friday the 17th of May, Winchester Music Club and Cantamus Choir from Gießen, Germany, team up for a concert in aid of the Mayor's charities, entitled Now is the Month of Maying, at St Cross Chapel. Tickets are £15 on the door. And then on Saturday the 18th, you can hear Mendelssohn's Elijah in the Cathedral at 7:30 p.m. Tickets range from £10 to £30 and are obtainable by ringing 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Announcements about the lighting up time. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 10th of May at 5:24 a.m. and begins at 8:42 p.m. On Wednesday the 15th of May, it ends at 5:16 a.m. and begins at 8:50 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. Now we come to the main headlines of the Hampshire Chronicle this week. And they are Abe is walking tall after operation, still a winner, King Ken bows out, and plans for huge solar panel farm hotting up. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Sheila?
Abe is walking tall after operation. Two-year-old's new lease of life. A Winchester family are celebrating after their two-year-old son underwent a successful life-changing operation. Abe Astor has just returned from the USA, where he had an operation which will help him walk normally. He suffers from spastic diplegia, a form of cerebral palsy, which makes his leg muscles very tight, restricting his movement. Abe had been facing the grim prospect of forever using a walking frame. But the £30,000 operation, selective dorsal isotomy, or SDR, removed much of the spasticity, meaning he'll be able to walk normally after physical therapy. The family has been raising money for the operation throughout the last year, and Mum Lee of Manor Farm Green Twyford said she was delighted and very grateful. Lee, 35, said, "We are thrilled it went well. It's now a case of building up these muscles that Abe has never used before, and we are pleased we went through with this as it was the right decision. Abe has been amazing. The surgery was tough, and we spent a week in hospital in St. Louis, Missouri, as part of a month out there. But because he's so young, he didn't fully understand what was going on, and he accepted everything and handled it very well." Lee said the family had no choice but to go to the USA, as the procedure is not widely available in the UK. She said, "This procedure should be more accessible, and medical people should be more knowledgeable here. It's something we should be telling parents about here, but they aren't because it's difficult to get it. We have been talking to Steve Brine about taking this issue to Parliament, and he's been a fantastic help. It makes my blood boil to think children have grown up with difficulty when they could have had this operation. Hopefully, between us, we can change just one child's life by alerting people to this procedure." They targeted raising £50,000 to pay for the operation and the following therapy, and are very close to reaching it, thanks to events like a sponsored swim at St. Swithin's School last month, organised by Jill Terry. This raised £300. The family, including Dad, Gavin, 38, and Sister Thayer, held a party at Marwell Activity Barn on Monday to spread the good news and thank donors. And this is accompanied by a delightful picture of the family and Abe trying out his legs.
Still a winner, King Ken bows out. He has been leader of Hampshire County Council for 14 years, a role that has seen him dubbed King Ken. But Tuesday saw the end of the 80-year-old's reign as the ruling Tory group arrived at the Castle Chamber in Winchester to elect a new leader. The end of an era was marked by Roy Perry beating Mel Kendall in a leadership election by a massive 36 votes to 8. Councillor Kendall, former Chief of Environment and Transport, suffered a double blow as he was ousted from the deputy leader post by Keith Manns at the party's annual meeting. Mr Perry, 70, father of Romsey and Southampton North MP Caroline Noakes, will be formally elected leader at the full council annual meeting on May 23rd. Mr Thornburgh became a county councillor in 1977 and has led his party to victory in three elections. During his time in the hot seat, the council gained a reputation for high quality services and, in recent years, low council tax. But he has also courted controversy, building a new £40 million council HQ, setting up a senate of civic leaders, of which he was the self-appointed leader, spending £220,000 televising council meetings while axing 1,400 jobs and services. The veteran council chief travelled between his home in Sway and official meetings in a chauffeur-driven car, a perk usually for mayors and council chairmen. To his loyal supporters, Mr Thornburgh was a strong and capable leader, but his critics slammed him as autocratic and like an emperor. He vacated the top job with reluctance, speaking just minutes after retaining his seat in Brockenhurst. Councillor Thornburgh said, "What was held against me was my age. I don't feel it and step aside with the deepest of regret." Councillor Thornburgh said it had been an 11-hour-per-day, 6-day-a-week job, and he would miss making decisions that made a difference to people's lives. He'll not disappear, as he was elected unopposed as chairman of the council, a largely ceremonial role. Councillor Perry, chief of children's services and a former deputy council leader, mounted a leadership challenge last year, missing out by 2 votes. The former MEP said, "I have no policy differences with Ken and have loyally served in his cabinet for the last 8 years. What is needed, however, is a change of leadership into a much more collegiate style, with more collective decision-making." Councillor Sean Woodward, leader of Fareham Borough Council, said he was absolutely delighted Councillor Perry beat Councillor Kendall. "Mel does a very competent job and he was leader of New Forest District Council. They were two very good candidates. However, their styles are very different, and the group plumped for Roy's. Ken Thornborough has given a great deal in the 14 years he has been leader, and Roy will build on that and make the council ever more inclusive and forward-thinking. Councillor Woodward rejected criticism of the Tories for going to the polls with one leader, only to choose a different one 5 days later. Every year, he said, there is an annual meeting and therefore always a chance that the leader could change. People voted for Conservatives to run Hampshire, and that is exactly what they have got. One Tory backbencher, who asked not to be named, said, thank goodness Ken kept his promise to step down this year. He didn't last year. He would have liked to carry on for life.
And next we have plans for huge solar panel farm hotting up. Public attend consultation to find out more. Plans for a massive solar farm in the Itchen Valley have been met with a cautious response from residents. A public consultation was held by Kronos Solar Projects on Monday, with around 35 residents poring over artists' impressions and information panels at Itchen Abbas and Avington Village Hall. If civic chiefs approve plans for the site near Folly Hill Farm, Itchen Stoke, it will be the first project of its kind for the Winchester district, and the 30-megawatt farm could produce electricity for around 18,700 people. But recurring concerns from those present were the visual impact of the solar panels and the loss of farmland. Frank Boner, a director of Kronos, said, we have employed professional landscape architects to take care of the landscape management of the site. We will put trees and hedges wherever there is a visual impact. Our panels are 220 metres to 240 metres high, and the hedges planted around it will be about 3 metres high. Robin Thorne, 70, from Ovington, said, looking at the plans, compared to wind farms, it seems much less intrusive. It's easy to be entirely negative, but I'm sure that the visual impact will be examined very closely. The most dangerous thing would be to come down instantly for or against before you know anything about it. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine visited the consultation and said he only found out about the plans less than a week ago. He said he had since been trying to raise public awareness of the consultation. He said, I like the idea of clean, renewable energy, but it seems a shame to lose active farmland. The community have to decide whether the benefits stack up for them. Kronos said the energy generated would feed into the national grid and back to the local community, providing energy security. Display boards also claimed the initiative would provide local jobs through planning, construction, operation and maintenance of the site. The 68-hectare plot is part of the Grange estate, owned by the Baring family, and no formal planning application has yet been made.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. Alexander, William Alexander, in hospital, aged 87. Carr, Maureen Carr, in North Hampshire District Hospital, aged 78. Elms, Susan Elms, aged 75, after a short battle with cancer. Evans, Betty Evans, at Abbots Barton, aged 91. Farmilo, Audrey Farmilo, at home, aged 90. Guppy, Victor Stanley Guppy, peacefully at home, aged 88. Headley, Ronald Headley, in hospital, aged 95. Lamb, Brenda Lamb, aged 73. Parry, Howell Parry, aged 88. Ralph, Derek Ralph, suddenly, aged 63. And finally, Steventon, Caroline Steventon, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 94. And now we'll go over to Jane, please, for Christian comment.
Christian comment this week is, great changes may come from small actions. Did you vote last week? The elections may not have seemed to have been of world-shattering importance. Who in America has heard of Hampshire County Council and who in Europe would know of the various names of the wards to which we belong? People might easily sneer about parish pump politics, yet, as we know from the headlines since, the results have had consequences that are more than merely local. They have been dubbed a wake-up call to the traditional parties. The policy makers of the parties are trying to work out what alterations they should make, and we have heard the voices of many MPs trying to give advice to their leaders as to what changes they wish for in their party. Sometimes the result depended on only a handful of votes. Perhaps one of them was yours. It shows that great changes may come from small actions. Religions, especially Christianity, emphasise this. Jesus said, "Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much, and whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much." He also told of the story of a widow who was at the temple when the rich and the powerful were making their generous contributions to the funds. She was very poor, and her small coins hardly made a tinkle as they fell into the box. And yet Jesus told his disciples, "Truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in all she had to live in." He did not measure her contribution by the size, but by her motive and her sacrifice. We can be all too easily blinded by the large and the spectacular, and overlook the importance of the seemingly insignificant. What we need is a perspective to see that the insignificant is indeed significant. Most of us have heard of Edward Norton Lawrence's chaos theory through the suggestion that a butterfly flapping its wings in South America could affect the weather in Texas. It argues that we need to take into account the smallest effect if we are to understand how systems work. Jesus says that is true not only in the physical world, but in morality also. Jesus talking about the final judgment on us has human beings as a story of a judge who, commending people for looking after him, says, "Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." And that was from Terry E. Hemming.
And now we have letters to the editor. And the first letter is read by Sheila.
And this letter comes from Phil Yates of Winchester. "Easier to handle and long overdue. Sir, two events have occurred in recent weeks affecting our city, one of which relates to the future of a certain newspaper, and the other the anniversary of a bus company demise. I refer to the new format of the Hampshire Chronicle and the winding up of King Alfred Motor Services. First, may I congratulate the editor and staff on the new, easier to handle and to read compact, which is long overdue. I found the broadsheet difficult to read, as others have over the years. It was not so many years ago that the front page of your paper was covered with adverts from estate agents. Thank goodness this was dispensed with to provide important news. Secondly, it was 40 years ago, April the 28th, 1973, that King Alfred buses made their last journeys after 53 years' service to Winchester. How apt, therefore, 40 years later, on April the 27th, 2013, that 13 out of 14 restored vintage buses and coaches were on parade in Andover Road car park, originally the cattle market, all spruced up for inspection by the general public. Some of us locals recall travelling on them many years ago, and still do so on New Year's Day. How pleasant to sit on one of the buses chatting to David Scheuer, a conductor of long standing, to Chris Webb, a fan of King Alfred buses, and to its chairman, James Freeman. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester."
Here's a grammatical comment from Brian Espiner, headed, "Not easy to justify such an increase. Sir, the compact shape is easier to handle, although more cutting up of paper does not justify such a huge increase in price. I would even agree it is more easy to handle. However, I would never agree that it is more easier to handle. Brian Espiner, Chandler Road, Winchester.
And this letter is from Mrs. Yates of Lyndhurst and is titled Announcements Back to Page 2, Please. Sir, congratulations on the New Hampshire Chronicle. Now we can look at it comfortably. But please put family announcements back on page 2. It's the first thing I look at, and I dislike hunting for them. They deserve to be on page 2. And that was Mrs. J. Yates, Thatched Cottage Park, Southampton Road, Lyndhurst.
This letter is from Sally Eames of Abbots Barton. Before you build, sort out the buses. Sir, the City Council wants to build on Abbots Barton. They need to widen the roads. We have 2 buses a day, Monday to Friday. They go down Dyson Drive, then Francis Gardens. Both are narrow and cars park on both sides. The buses have a job getting round. Then they go along Chandler Road and up Russell Road. They need to sort this out. Also, do not pull down the bus station. The Queen Mother's husband opened it in 1934. Sally Eames, Charles Close, Abbots Barton.
And Keith's story says it's sheer folly to build on prime farmland. Sir, proposals in the Chronicle May the 2nd from a German firm to build a huge solar power station on nearby farmland will shock many people. The proposal involves covering 175 acres, 70 hectares, of countryside at Folly Hill Farm, Itchinstoke, near Alresford, with solar panels to produce electricity for 30,000 homes. Much of the middle and lower Itchin Valley, south of Winchester, has been ruined by excessive development. Soon, development will ruin farmland north of Winchester for the Barton Farm housing development. Pitt Manor land to the east, and in due course, Bushfield down to the south. To the east, farmland along the Alresford Road, opposite St Swithin's School, is earmarked for development, and countryside between Basingstoke and Winchester is still being targeted for Mitchell Devon New Town. All this development has been subject of public debate, with developers ultimately defeating conservationists and local residents every time, except at Mitchell Devon, where the struggle continues. However, a new power station will tip the scales even more in favour of further development. Just as more roads generate more car traffic and more runways generate more air traffic, so does more power supply generate more industry and housing. A power station supplying electricity for 30,000 homes would not only meet the needs of all the announced expansion of Winchester and Alresford, but also the developer's future wish list for the Greater Pitt Scheme, Barton Farm Phase 2, Bushfield Down, Magdalen Hill Down, Mitchell Devon New Town, and a few thousand more homes in Alresford. Many will come to regret the loss of landscape and wildlife in an unspoiled part of the upper Itchin Valley. But I also worry about our food security. With the fastest growing population in Europe, we already have to import almost 50% of our food. Food prices are soaring because of global shortages, and 5 million British families are borrowing money to buy food. Shouldn't we be restoring farmland, not destroying it? Other countries put their solar power stations on barren land, such as deserts. Isn't it sheer folly to build one in prime agricultural land, even if it is called Folly Hill Farm? Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And this is from Mike Rowe and is headed Less Cavalier with Taxpayers' Money. Sir, I see that Ken Thornborough is stepping down from his position as leader of his party and of Hampshire County Council. This is good news, and I hope the Conservatives will choose wisely and appoint someone who will be less cavalier with our money. Who knows, it might even encourage me to give my vote back to the party at the next elections. And that was Mike Rowe, King's Close, Kingsworthy.
This letter is from Councillor Frank Pearson, who is the Mayor of Winchester, 2012-13. Mayor's thanks for memorable year. Sir, as I come to the end of my mayoral year, I want to thank the many individuals and groups within the wider Winchester district who have welcomed me with warmth and generosity to their events. Having undertaken almost 500 engagements since May last year, I know that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are doing amazing work for their communities without any wish for thanks or praise. It has been a huge privilege to have been Mayor of Winchester during a momentous time in our nation's history. Both the Diamond Jubilee celebrations and Olympic and Paralympic events brought an unprecedented outpouring of joy. My wife Anne and I had the honour of welcoming 6 members of the royal family to Winchester during the year, meeting members of the Olympic and Paralympic teams on several occasions, and visiting so many diverse groups of people. It is to you, the citizens of Winchester, that I give my profound thanks for making this such a memorable year. Councillor Frank Pearson, Abbey House, The Broadway, Winchester.
And John Duckworth asks, will we still call it Barton Farm? Sir, the suggestion last week of Watership Down as replacement name for the 1,000-dwelling development north of Winchester, in case Barton Farm reminded us of what we had lost, might not commend itself to the folk of Kingsclear if they wended their way south and found themselves meandering through a vast new suburb given the name of their very distinguished town. But I do recall some time back your hospitable columns hosting the suggestion that the eminent local politician who bludgeoned through this prospective scheme could be memorialised by calling it Beckettville. Why not? John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop, Stockbridge.
And this is from AP Lodge and is headed Smaller Families Key to the Future. Sir, like Peter Moore, letters, May the 2nd, I was at Jonathan Porritt's talk on population at the Guildhall and was impressed. However, it bothered me that these campaigns are never going to get the message across if they don't address several other aspects and approaches. Firstly, the populist message. Jonathan was, as you would expect, extremely literate and well-primed in his arguments, which went down well with the mainly social group ABs that comprised the audience. However, without a wider populist approach as well, you will always remain a minority interest group until overpopulation is so bad it cannot be ignored, and then it will be too late for any quality of life and the environment. Secondly, if politicians had the courage to incentivise small families financially through the tax benefit system, we might really make progress. What was that large pink thing that just flew past my window? Finally, and most importantly, you need people to make an emotional connection between the facts and figures and the choices they make. So we should be asking, if you choose to have 4 children instead of 2, the country will be twice as crowded for your grandchildren, with only half as much space for growing crops. How will you answer your grandchildren and the rest of us for their impoverished quality of life? The personal is political, and we cannot have infinite population growth on a finite planet, since Mars is not yet ripe for development any time soon. And that was from AP Lodge, Takedown Meads, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking back now, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Sheila.
200 years ago, May the 10th, 1813. Prisoners escape foiled at Perth. Wednesday morning, 3 of the prisoners at the depot at Perth found their way by means of false keys into an empty cellar under the tower. They had with them suits of black with crepes for their hats, in which they intended to have dressed themselves over their prison jackets, and to have walked out with the crowd at the hour of market. They were discovered, however, by a person who had gone into their place of confinement to examine the water pipes. Secondly, the pretensions of Anne Moore of Tetbury, Gloucestershire, to live without bodily sustenance have at length been set at rest. We mentioned in our last issue that several respectable gentlemen in that neighbourhood had, with her consent, agreed to watch her, to prevent the secret conveyance of food to her, and to ascertain whether her powers correspond with her pretensions. We are now authorised to state that she gave in on Friday morning last, the 9th day of the watch, by which time she was reduced to a state of extreme debility and emaciation.
Yes, two items from May the 10th, 1913. The first is, Women's Suffrage Bill is rejected. The Representation of the People Women Bill was rejected by a majority of 47. The Prime Minister and the Secretary for Foreign Affairs were among those who took part in the debate. Mr. Asquith pointed out that the bill had never been approved by the existing electorate and described it as a discriminating and, in a sense, an aristocratic measure. Sir E. Grey accepted the bill as an instrument in Sir E. Grey accepted the bill as an instalment and put forward arguments in favour of the enfranchisement of women. Mr. Walter Long expressed his admiration of unruffled dignity with which the Prime Minister had faced the treatment to which he had been exposed at the hands of militant suffragists. And the second piece, at Winchester City Bench, Charles James Barrett was charged with sleeping out. Early on Sunday, Sergeant Mabey, in consequence of complaints, went to an outbuilding at the back of 30 St. John Street, where he found the prisoner asleep. The head constable told the bench there were 7 convictions against the prisoner, 3 were for sleeping out and 1 for larceny. The prisoner was a perfect nuisance. The bench again sentenced prisoner to 1 month's imprisonment with hard labour.
And from 50 years ago, May the 11th, 1963, homes evacuated at Barton Stacey. Over 20 families living in army married quarters in Roberts Road and East Road at Barton Stacey were told by police officers on Friday evening of last week to open all their doors and windows in the rear of their homes and then move into the front part of the house. Once this had been done, Southern Command bomb experts exploded a large American-type anti-tank mine, which a tractor driver ploughing in a field 150 yards from the rear of the married quarters had unearthed. The mine contained 7 pounds of high explosive and was considered too dangerous to move. And secondly, a scheme of grants for the maintenance of buildings of special historic or architectural interest was set in motion by Hampshire County Council Planning Committee at Winchester on Friday last week. Before the meeting was a report on a meeting between committee representatives and Lord Euston, a member of the Historic Buildings Council. So far as the scope of the problem was concerned, there were approximately 6,000 buildings in Hampshire which were included in the statutory list of buildings of special interest prepared by the Ministry of Housing and Local Government.
25 years ago, May the 6th, 1988. The thin blue line is getting thinner. A worrying rise of public disorder coupled with a severe shortage of bobbies on the beat is causing the thin blue line in Hampshire to show signs of stress and strain. This is the most alarming conclusion drawn by the county's retiring chief constable, Mr. John Duke, in his 11th and final annual report. And it comes in a year when the crime rate again rose by nearly 3%. While detections went up only 1%. In its introduction, the report spells out Mr. Duke's deepest concern about the urgent need for more police officers to patrol the streets of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. And secondly, the farmer can help the barn owl. That's the message this week from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Naturalists Trust, which is mounting a campaign to try to save the endangered species. Contrary to popular belief, barn owls do not just nest in barns. Many prefer trees, so the October storm that removed 15 million trees from the British landscape wiped out thousands of potential nest sites. Mr. Richard Tyler, the Trust field officer, said, Barn owls were in deep trouble even before the storm. A survey recently showed that losses since 1934 have been more than 80% for some parts of Hampshire. Nationally, the decline is almost 70%.
And now we have editorial comment from Noel, followed by first person from Sheila.
Yes, editorial comment this week is headed "Tories in Good Health as Ken Steps Down." The leader of Hampshire County Council, Ken Thornburgh, has announced he is stepping down from the role after 14 years to be replaced by Roy Perry. Mr. Thornburgh has done the right thing, and the fact that his successor so clearly won the election on Tuesday, trouncing Mel Kendall by 36 votes to 8, would indicate that most of his colleagues would agree on the need for a new leader in general, and Roy Perry in particular. Many would argue that Mr. Thornburgh should have made this decision 12 months ago when Councillor Perry launched a challenge, but better late than never, and Mr. Thornburgh is to be congratulated and thanked for his dedication to serving the community for so long in the role. Whilst it was clear from his comments that Mr. Thornburgh was departing with reluctance, he nonetheless leaves the Conservative group on the council in good health. Unlike in other parts of the country, the Tories in Hampshire avoided the worst of the UKIP rise. That is testament to the generally good services and tight financial ship that Councillor Thornburgh steered, although many assert that with healthy cash reserves, more could have been done preserving frontline services.
And first person this week is by Ronald Allison and entitled "Compact is Good News All Round." Picking up my new look Hampshire Chronicle last Thursday, I overheard the comment, "Oh look, it's gone tabloid." Well, strictly speaking, I suppose it has. My dictionary defines tabloid as a newspaper of small format which gives its news in a concentrated form. Apparently the word has been used in that context since 1926. It's also a medical term. But now it's more often applied to that group of smaller-sized newspapers, otherwise known as red tops. Well, a red top, the Chronicle most definitely is not. So, in the fashion adopted by the Times some years ago, we are now a compact. A good word, that, compact. Back to the dictionary. Compact, among other definitions, means to condense, to consolidate, to join firmly together. All good, strong, reassuring stuff. Certainly nothing to suggest less reliability or any lowering of standards. Editor Keith Redbourne and chief reporter Andrew Napier made it quite clear last week that though size and layout would obviously change, the Chronicle's values would remain. I'm sure that they will, and as a late-night, last-thing-before-sleep newspaper reader, I find the compact just right. The old Chronicle really was a big paper to handle in bed. With Thursday as publication day, it is only now that the Chronicle can cover the local election results. The political scene in Hampshire has changed since this time last week. The Conservatives still control the County Council, with by now a new leader, but have 6 fewer seats. The losses coming, it seems, mostly to UKIP. The latter followed up their recent second place in the Eastleigh by-election by taking almost a quarter of the votes and winning 10 seats. The Lib Dems lost 7 seats, Labour gained 4. Who knows what these results will mean for the general election in 2015? Are they a reliable forecast? Has UKIP replaced the Lib Dems as the party of protest? Or is there more to them than that? Have they more than one visible spokesman? Yes, we have, they will say to that in Eastleigh. And putting these and other questions together, will those who voted UKIP for the first time in the English counties do so again in a general election? If, eventually, there is to be a lasting change in the membership of the House of Commons, remember that involves the whole of the United Kingdom, and that, of course, may or may not include Scotland. One way and another, the current political scene is as exciting as it has been for many, many years, though Messiahs Cameron and Miliband may wish it were not so. How much simpler life was when practically all the votes were shared between the Conservatives and Labour. But not so interesting, and not actually very fair. And that was by Ronald Allison.
Hampshire Chronicle has given us a Belgarum this week. So we go over to Noel for the first of the snippets.
Yes, Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And this one's headed Change for Worse. The Deanery book sale has returned, sort of. We reported the welcome news several weeks ago, but there has been a major change. The books are no longer displayed under the porch, available at all times. There was something rather civilised on a summer's evening as the shadows lengthened in the close to go into the porch and while away a time perusing the hundreds of books left under cover. Purchasers were invited to put the money in a slot in a side door. Now the books are kept in a side room and so usually available only in office hours. Belgarum hears there may be an issue with the insurers following the arson attack on New Year's Day. The cathedral was asked, but has yet to respond.
Faraway places. After last summer was dominated by clouds and rain, who could blame Winchester folk for wanting to get away to sunny skies this year? The most popular tourist destination for city residents is the Maldives, according to Winchester High Street travel agents Kooni. The USA is the second favourite, while Wintonians have booked more holidays to Vietnam than any other part of the UK. Marianne Haywood-Pinney of Kooni said, "Following the wet summer of 2012 and a long, cold and grey winter, many people have had enough and want something to look forward to. The top 10 destination list is as follows. 1. Maldives. 2. The USA. 3. Sri Lanka. 4. Thailand. 5. Italy. 6. Mauritius. 7. Barbados. 8. The Arab Emirates. 9. Vietnam. And 10. India."
And now Belgarum has an artist in coffee. Winchester barista Dan Tamang has won the title of the best latte artist in the country. Dan, 27, pictured above, works for the Alsford-based Caracoli, which also has a branch in the High Street, Winchester. He wowed the judges with his artistic flair in pouring milk into the coffee of lattes and cappuccinos. Dan said, "I'm delighted to be named UK Latte Art Champion. At Caracoli, we take our coffee very seriously. We love to add our own twist with a variety of patterns and pictures, and customers love it too." And there's a joyous picture of Dan celebrating his win and being clapped, with a picture of his best Caracoli cup of coffee below, of leaves swirled into the top of the foam.
And now a sad sign of the times. It is the only remnant of a type of pub that is now all but extinct in Winchester. The accompanying photo shows the forlorn inn sign that once marked the chimneys in Week. On the site now stands the suitably Bauhaus-inspired design for the German supermarket Aldi that is due to open today, May the 9th. The chimneys was an example of the mock Tudor roadhouse that sprang up in the 1920s and 1930s and drew the wrath of poet John Betjeman. Other examples in Winchester are the Stanmore Hotel, knocked down a few years ago to be replaced by a retirement home, and the new Queen's Head at the other end of Stanmore, which is also threatened with demolition. All were pubs built by the breweries, mindful that many of their customers would, in all likelihood, be arriving by car. They thus had big sites to allow for motor vehicles, which inadvertently made them attractive to developers some 70 years later.
Abseiler Alex, the man in the mask. The origins of the world's newest superhero can be revealed. As Supercow recovers from his daring deed, abseiling down the Spinnaker Tower on May the 5th for Naomi House, Belgarum can disclose how he came to be. The man behind the mask, Alex Vassilakis, 30, of Northlands Drive, said he bought the costume years ago for a Halloween party and improvised when his abseil partner, Keith Wilson, told him the theme of the event was superheroes. Alex, an NHS worker, said, I knew I didn't have a superhero outfit, but I did own the cow outfit, and I thought I could muster something together. So I went out and bought a cape and a mask, put it all together, and it worked. It was all a bit of fun, but I also found out a cow is the official mascot of Naomi House, so it worked out even better. He added, I don't know if we've seen the end of Super Cow. I like doing things for charity, and I'd probably drag him out of the closet should something call for it. The intrepid duo raised more than £1,000.
That's the end of Balgarum, and now we continue with further items of general news. Over to you, Sheila.
How we're saving the British pub. It started as a one-man's hobby in a barn on a farm. Now it is producing 9,000 pints a week. While others in the beer industry are suffering with pub and breweries closing all across the country in recent years, one producer appears to be bucking that trend. Not only has Upham Brewery opened its state-of-the-art production hub, but last week it also unveiled its plans for a major expansion, which could provide as many as 500 jobs. At present, the brewery brews 2 to 3 times a week, but this time next year, the company has predicted that it would have increased the number of fermentation vessels, allowing it to brew double that. And the business, based at the Stakes Farm in Upham, would one day like to be selling its ale right across the country. Chris Phillips, chief executive of the Upham Pub Company, puts the success down to a number of factors, including a resurgence in the popularity of real ale, but also in the changing nature of how pubs need to be run and the importance of keeping it local. The business certainly comes from small and very local beginnings when owner of Stakes Farm, John Macmillan, discovered his barn had a historic license to brew beer. He started brewing in 2009, giving what he made first to family and friends and then to local pubs. But when he decided to turn this into a business, he brought in experts from within the industry to make that possible. Since then, the brewery has gone from being able to produce 4 barrels with each brew to 30 barrels. Upham Brewery has 3 pubs so far, 2 of which are in Hampshire, and plans to be in charge of 20 to 30 more within 5 years. It sells to more than 200 outlets across Hampshire, Sussex, Wiltshire, Dorset and Berkshire, including in local Majestic stores and the Co-op. They also are selling to top London pubs, such as the Admiral Codrington in Chelsea and Reading Station. And this is accompanied by a picture of Upham Brewery director David Butcher and Chris Phillips raising a glass to its success.
The new outpatients department opens. The £3.3 million outpatients department at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital has officially opened. Although the service opened its doors to patients in January, the official ceremony took place last Friday. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, did the honours, with Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Bryan also in attendance. The new facility will serve 100,000 patients a year and replaces the old huts facing Romsey Road. Outpatient sister Diane Adam has worked at the RHCH for 15 years and said the new site is good news for patients and staff alike. "This is the biggest change we have seen since I've been working here," she said. "This is what people think a hospital should look like. It's calm, clean and warm. The old building was not fit for purpose. The staff were looking forward to working here as their old working environment was not particularly good." Mr. Bryan also heaped praise on the facility. "This is how the hospital should be and will be. This is a great bit of investment and gives patients reassurance that this hospital is going forward," he said. Councillor Pearson, who arrived in the RHCH's new buggy, which helps patients make their way from the hospital's multi-storey car park through the site, said, "I'm delighted that the finance has been made available for this. We've been waiting for many a long year." The new department, situated in the Burrell Wing, is purpose-built and features electronic self-check-in terminals, as well as waiting areas designed especially for children. The project was funded by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which took over the RHCH last January.
And this one is entitled 2000 Dig Garden Fair. The bank holiday sunshine brought out the gardeners as around 2,000 people flocked to the 10th Bishop Swaltham Garden Fair. The event raised £10,000 for the St John Eye Hospital, one of the largest amounts in the fair's history. Among this year's visitors were Ollie Chappell from Stubbington, who has been the first person through the gate in the fair's 10-year history, and the pupils from Prince's Mead School's Garden Club. Joan Farrer, chairman of the Garden Fair Committee, was delighted. Everyone was very happy, especially the plants people, who did incredibly well. It was the first good day we have had, and everyone wants to be in their garden planting. Mrs. Chappell, a fitness instructor turned landscape gardener, said, "I'm looking for that something different. It's the atmosphere I love, and I look forward to it every year." Around 20 people came from Prince's Mead, including the headmistress, caretaker, members of the gardening club, and their parents and siblings. The head, Penelope Kirk, said, "We have a gardening club for children in years 4 to 6. There are 10 children in the club, and we've got 5 allotments. They were put into pairs, and each pair was given £5 to buy vegetables." The fair, which was held in the grounds of Wintershill Hall for the second time, was opened by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, and his wife Anne. Cuff Billet's new Europa jazz band provided live music. Hillier Garden Centre boss Andy McIndoe answered garden questions, and the crowd was also entertained by birds of prey trained by Falcon High. And there are two delightful photos of happy gardeners sitting around on the grass waving in the sunshine and also browsing through the stalls in the beautiful gardens.
Firm which provides meals for the elderly is celebrating. A start-up firm has been celebrating after their food hit the shelves in Winchester. On the Menu, based in Winnell, provide meals tailored for elderly people. Smaller, complete, high in nutrients, easy to open, and with sleeves in large print. The company are in their second year of trading, but their products have not been in the city shops until now. Managing Director Elizabeth Jones said, "The statistics for malnourishment of people over the age of 65 who live at home in the UK is horrifying and increases with age. This is a generation that rarely complain and often suffer in silence. It is the catalyst for our business and is at the core of our mission to halt these statistics and provide good quality food that meets the needs of seniors. We all need different types of food at different stages of life for different conditions. Kingsgate Wine and Provisions on the Kingsgate Street will be the first to stock the meals, and a tea party was held there to celebrate. Residents from St John's Charity helped with the research in the early days of the company, and they were invited to join in the party on Tuesday, May the 7th. Elizabeth said it was fantastic and we had a great turnout. We had a 96-year-old lady who was amazing. She said that what she would like to do, is to ring ahead to the shop and place her order, then come round with her trolley to collect the meals. And this is accompanied by a very jolly picture of the tea party.
Concern for missing children in care. Children suspected to have been victims of trafficking have disappeared from local authority care in Hampshire, a Hampshire Chronicle investigation has found. Of 200 children in care who ran away or went missing for more than 24 hours over the last 3 years, the vast majority were found. But less than 5 in the care of Southampton City Council and 2 looked after by Hampshire County Council are still missing. All those who disappeared are believed to have arrived in Britain unaccompanied by adults. Southampton City Council refused to reveal the number of vulnerable children lost from its care or give any details on the grounds it could lead to their identification and put them in danger from traffickers. But the 2 boys from Vietnam and Iran who vanished from County Council care were both 17. Hampshire Constabulary regularly appeals for information about missing people, but no details of the 2 missing 17-year-olds were released to the media. There is a growing concern among charities not enough effort is made to find missing foreign children, a claim Hampshire Constabulary denies. Bharti Patel, chief executive of ECPAT UK, a charity that works with victims of trafficking, said there was a blindness when foreign children go missing. She said they don't have parents here, they are treated differently to British children going missing when more resources are committed. Rather than a missing child inquiry concerning the local police, it is seen as an immigration matter and passed to the Home Office and Border Agency. The 17-year-old Vietnamese boy who disappeared from Hampshire County Council's care last year was found months later in a police raid on a cannabis factory in London. A county council spokesman said the police, in consultation with Children's Services, classified the teenager as a willing absconder. But campaigners say the children often come from poor families, are forced to work without pay, and face threats if they try to break away from criminal gangs. Chief of Children's Services, Councillor Roy Perry, said, "Any young person who goes missing from care in Hampshire is one too many, but it is important to note that all but two of those were safely returned. The two who did not were unaccompanied asylum seekers, and sadly this is a specific group where, for obvious reasons, the rate of missing can be much higher."
And this is Students Rate Winchester. The University of Winchester has climbed 6 places in a recent university ranking guide. This year's Times Higher Education, THE, Student Experience Survey saw the university rise from 28th to 22nd. The Student Experience Survey is now in its 8th year and gathered data from 12,000 undergraduate students between October 2011 and July 2012. The students are asked to rate 21 aspects of university life on a 7-point scale, with attributes ranging from quality of teaching staff and courses to facilities, accommodation and social life. Winchester scored highly for its campus and the helpfulness of staff, as well as library facilities and opening hours. Professor Joy Carter, Vice Chancellor, said, "We pride ourselves on delivering innovative teaching whilst fostering a supportive and friendly community on our campus. I'm thrilled that we have been recognised and endorsed by our own students in this important survey." 7 post-1992 universities were in the top 40, with Winchester placing 2nd out of those. The news follows the recently published Complete University Guide, in which Winchester rose 7 places to 69th.
Village Green bid unlikely to succeed, Councillor. A campaign to halt a 7.5 million housing development in Abbots Barton looks set to suffer another blow. Residents angry at plans to build affordable homes on the Green at Dyson Drive applied to Hampshire County Council for Village Green status in the hope of protecting it from development. But the application sent last autumn now looks unlikely to go through. City Councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "I think it's optimistic and I don't think it will pass. My view is that you have to have more housing for people to live in, and this is not a bad site for it to be. The Green adds to the area, but I'm not sure it's vital, although affordable housing is. In March, Civic Chiefs endorsed a planning framework that will guide the development of 50 new homes in the area, but residents slammed the document. Speaking at the time, Neil Townsend of the Abbots Barton Community Development Action Group said the document was based on flawed logic. He said, "We were promised by Mr. Tate, City Council portfolio holder for new homes delivery, that the framework would address our concerns, and we are bitterly disappointed. The plans are part of an overall programme to build 350 affordable homes in Winchester over the next 10 years. The plans for Abbots Barton will affect a mix of open space and garages in Austin Close, Dyson Drive, Charles Close, Hussey Close, Hillier Way and Colborne Court."
Keep fishing, says Clifford, as family marks his 100th. As far as guest lists go, it was an eclectic one. But renowned surgeon Dr. Clifford Brewer, who turned 100 last week, has led an equally varied and colourful life. More than 60 people attended his birthday party at the Old House Hotel in Wickham, including his granddaughter, Sky Sports presenter Charlotte Jackson, the Welsh football team manager Chris Coleman, and Admiral Sir Jeremy Black, who captained the aircraft carrier HMS Invincible during the Falklands War. Charlotte said, "The incredible thing is that he's still fly fishing, and he still lectures us and tells us what we should be doing. He's incredible." Chris Coleman, Charlotte's partner, said, "He's an incredible fellow. The first time I met him, I could not believe how sharp he was. I wouldn't mind some players with his kind of mentality." Dr. Brewer volunteered for service in the Second World War, and three times his parents were told he was missing, probably killed. He met his wife Marjorie, who passed away in 2000, in Normandy after the D-Day landings. They had five children, two girls and three boys. His daughter, Chris Jackson, said, "He still drives and he fishes. He has a very active mind too. I hope it bodes well for me." After 33 years as a consultant surgeon at the Liverpool Royal Infirmary, he and Marjorie retired to Hampshire in 1978 to be close to their family. Dr. Brewer has spent much of his retirement fishing the Test and Itchen, and now lives with Chris in 100 Acres Road, Wickham. Dr. Brewer said, "Transportation is the biggest change I've seen in my life, the aeroplane and the motor car, and communication, the TV and the radio. And the NHS used to be very much better organised in its first 20 years. He is in no doubt about the secret to staying fit and healthy. My advice is to keep fishing," he added. And there's a lovely picture of Dr. Clifford Brewer surrounded by all sort of different ages of his family, looking very cheerful.
And this one is, "Forget the cathedral, where are the bollards?" They are fast becoming one of Winchester's most popular tourist attractions. But it's not the cathedral or the Great Hall. It's a group of painted bollards that are bringing people to the city. Around 40 of the Amersham Towns Women's Guild made the trip last week to see the bollards in the square, which have been painted by the Colour Factory, a group of Winchester-based artists, recreating some of the world's most famous paintings on the street furniture. Rachel Alexander of the Colour Factory said, "By choosing iconic paintings to create an outside gallery, there is an instant air of familiarity. Everyone knows the Mona Lisa by Leonardo da Vinci, but you wouldn't expect to see her reproduced on a bollard." Fellow artist Jenny Muncaster added, "It's funny to think what started as a small public arts project in 2005 has become a tourist landmark and is helping us to engage with young people in a fun way." And there's a lovely photo of Jenny Muncaster dressed as Dr. Kakistan with a pink helmet with BAC on it for Bollard Awareness Clinic and assorted other garments, addressing the Towns Women's Guild group to a bollard decorated with a painting of the Mona Lisa.
Putting their best feet forward to help. Winchester Street pastors have been given a helping foot by Hampshire Police. The constabulary provided the pastors with 200 pairs of flip-flops and personal attack alarms to help them during late-night patrols. Pastors based at St. Peter's Church in Drury Street go out late at night in teams of six from Thursday to Saturday, offering support to anyone in need, such as replacement footwear, first aid or water. Sergeant Richard Holland, Partnerships and Community Safety Sergeant for Winchester and East Hampshire, praised the pastors for their impact in the city. He said, "I was a bit sceptical at first, but having seen them in action, I realised they can be a shoulder to cry on and a voice of reason and get people out of trouble. They are so approachable and prevent a lot of violent crime." Winchester Pastor Coordinator Mark Hibbert-Hingston said the new equipment would be a great help. He said it's a boost in two ways. First, in a non-tangible way, it's a demonstration of police support for us, and they are putting their money where their mouth is. We have considered buying personal attack alarms before, so to be given them is a real bonus. 12 new pastors will be commissioned at a ceremony at Christchurch, in Christchurch Road, this Saturday, May the 11th, bringing the total number up to 64 street pastors and 26 prayer pastors who stay behind during patrols offering prayers for anyone in need. And this is accompanied by a picture of the pastors wearing their pink flip-flops and carrying their personal alarms.
Pupils on patrol for diamond. Winchester schoolchildren are being encouraged to find their diamond in the rough. They're being invited to nominate their diamond lollipop person for Hampshire's School Crossing Patrol of the Year. But it won't be a simple case of filling out a form, because nominations should come in the form of a poem. A poem, drawing or story, explaining why their school crossing patrol is the best. Hampshire County Council has 262 school crossing patrols, and 2013 marks 60 years of crossing patrols nationally, the service's diamond anniversary. A finalist will be chosen from each of the 11 boroughs and districts across the county, with finalists invited to an awards ceremony in Winchester on July the 10th. The winner will take home £500 of IKEA vouchers, and all of the finalists will get bespoke fleeces with a road safety goodie bag for the children who nominated them. The school whose lollipop person is crowned School Crossing Patrol of the Year 2013 will win a street feet kit, courtesy of Fox Oilskins, designed to help children practice crossing the road safely. The closing date for entries is May the 24th.
"I must have been mad," says Flying Vicar. As the priest in charge of the apparition benefice, his job presents a varied range of challenges. So you might think that when the Reverend Graham Bokett, a former soldier, jumped out of an aeroplane to raise money for local charities, he didn't lose too much sleep over it. But the 45-year-old father of two said, "I cannot pretend it was not terrifying. It's possibly the single most stupid thing I've done in my life, but also the most exciting." Reverend Bokett said the idea just came to him out of the blue. "I woke one morning and had a brainwave, but I booked it that morning so that I couldn't even back out then," he said. The skydive took place last Thursday and was a tandem jump from 12,000 feet, taking off from Hinton Airfield in Oxfordshire. "Being a priest, I decided I couldn't do it at Nether Avon, the home of the Red Devils. Imagine the headlines if something went wrong." Reverend Bokett, who has been based in Cheriton for 9 months, said his parishioners had been very supportive and that his wife Tracy, although supportive too, was a little sceptical. He said, "My wife just thinks I'm an idiot, but she's used to it by now." Parishioner James Stanley of Beauworth said, "He's settled in extremely well. I think everyone feels jolly good about him and we're all enthusiastic. He has so far raised an impressive £2,500 for three organisations: Help for Heroes, the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Military Aid Fund, and the Upper Itchen Benefice."
Thomas 11 has art of chocolate making licked. A Winchester boy who is visually impaired has spoken of his delight at taking part in a chocolate making day. Thomas Pellet, 11, of Teg Down, was one of 12 youngsters who attended the event organised by charity Action for Blind People last month. He is a member of Hampshire Actionaires Club, which is one of 26 activity clubs for blind and visually impaired children in the UK. Thomas, a pupil at a Week primary school, said, "I was really excited about the chocolate making. I love chocolate and it was really fun making my own." Hampshire Actionaires teamed up with Salon du Chocolat in Chichester to host the day, with children making chocolate models and then decorating them. Nikki Holloway of Action for Blind People said, "At Action, we are always trying to give children, young people and their families the opportunity to take part in a variety of interesting, unusual and fun activities. By making friends, sharing experiences, and feeling good through success, the self-esteem and belief of young members is improved. Chocolate making was a perfect example of this," and this is accompanied by a picture of Thomas trying his hand at chocolate making.
Family heartbreak after rabbit mauled. A Winchester woman has called for more control over large dogs after her rabbit was mauled to death in her front garden. Lisa Fleming of Fromond Road Week saw her five-year-old lionhead rabbit Roger killed last Wednesday evening by a husky. The rabbit had been placed outside in an enclosed area for her daughter Tia to play with before the dog attacked. Lisa, 44, an office manager, said, "It's quite usual for our rabbit to be in the garden with my daughter Tia and her friends. This time they were inside when it was mauled by this husky. But if it had happened a couple of minutes later, it would have been in front of my eight-year-old daughter. These big dogs should always be on leads or be muzzled. I've spoken to the dog warden and he agrees with me. Something has to be done." And Tia said, "I'm really sad what happened to my rabbit. Roger won a trophy for the best animal at the Littleton show in 2010, and I was really proud of him. I'm scared when I see big dogs now." A City Council environmental health spokesman said, "We received a report about an incident in Week, and we are investigating."
And this is Speaking Up at Commons Visit. A Winchester theatre group put on a special performance in Parliament. The Blue Apple Theatre, which showcases actors with learning disabilities, performed in Speaker's House after City MP Steve Brine organised the visit. A cast of seven presented Living Without Fear, a story about young adults with learning disabilities dealing with harassment, mate crime and prejudice. The audience included Culture Secretary Maria Miller and Disabilities Minister Esther McVie, as well as Hampshire's Police new Chief Constable Andy Marsh. After the show, the cast got to take a tour inside the House of Commons chamber. And there is a photograph of a group of young Blue Apple actors with Steve Brine surrounding the Speaker, John Bercow, and Jane Jessop at the House of Commons.
School parking plan won't work. Parents angry over provision for new school. Winchester residents remain concerned over plans for a new super school in a city suburb. The County Council wants to build a 420-place primary at the Westgate School in Cheriton Road, Fulford. But residents say plans to reduce congestion by creating 40 drop-off bays in Chilbolton Avenue are flawed. Liz Darlison, 47, of Cheriton Road, said, "They are only on one side of the road, so you will have to manoeuvre into a space on a busy road with cars driving very fast. Plenty of drivers will not want to drive all the way down to the end of the road, and they will do U-turns." Other residents questioned the distance between Chilbolton Avenue and the proposed new school. Gina Petford of Berwick Road said, "It's not a good solution at all. The spaces are so far away from the school, so parents won't want to drop off children in bad weather, and they will just drive into Cheriton Road to drop them off. The people who will use the spaces are parents from Westgate Primary, and you can't blame them because of the parking problems at Weston already." Chris Jones, 61, retired of Cheriton Road, added, "I think it's a desperate attempt to fix a problem." Residents also slam plans to move Rotherley Nursery across the site because it means losing large playing fields and replacing them with a smaller artificial grass area. Mrs. Petford, whose three children have attended Rotherley, Weston and the Westgate, said the nursery will lose all the quality outdoor space and a natural grassy area. "The children get to go out into lovely green spaces, and people know that it is an important factor when they decide to send their children here. The council is doing away with something unique and important to a child's development." But Councillor Roy Perry, the County Council's Children's Services Chief, said the Chilbolton Avenue measures would make a difference. He said, "As far as I'm concerned, the Chilbolton Avenue spaces are additional parking provision, which will ease congestion, and it's better to have them than not to. Both schools will continue to do their best to encourage parents to walk with their children rather than use cars." He added, "Moving the nursery was necessary to make the scheme viable and meet demand for school places." He said, "We are doing our best to make provision for the increasing number of children in Winchester. If someone has a solution that causes no problems for anyone, then we'd like to hear it. A council committee will decide on the application on June the 6th.
It's a tough job, but I'll do it." His duties would include waking up the kangaroos and swimming with dolphins and sea lions. So it's no wonder that Scott Tisson sees the job in Australia as the opportunity of a lifetime. The 29-year-old from Wickham is one of 150 candidates left from 35 countries, still in with a chance of grabbing one of six dream jobs being offered by Tourism Australia. And it's the role of wildlife caretaker which appeals to wildlife lover Mr. Tisson, who has grown up surrounded by animals. He's up against 24 other candidates from around the world to land the post. In the UK alone, nearly 24,000 people applied for the role. As a wildlife caretaker, his job would see him swim with sea lions, come face to face with great white sharks, and assist on conservation projects. The former Swanmore Secondary School and Barton Peveril College pupil would be exploring the environment on foot, bike, kayak and boat, taking photographs. The six-month position has a salary of around £65,000, and business consultant Mr. Tisson would share his experiences with others afterwards. Mr. Tisson of Heath Road said, "I want to make sure I grab this opportunity with both hands and do everything in my power to get down to the last three." Finalists will be announced on May the 15th, with the six successful job winners announced on June the 21st.
And this is Les Reaches His 100. He may have spent his early working years in the big house, but no one was at all surprised when Les Holder opted for a life on the land. Les, who marked his 100th birthday earlier this week, was born and raised in leafy Cheriton, second youngest of six children, five of them boys. Leaving school at 14, he went to be a boot boy at Tichborne Park, later graduating to underfootman at Broadlands, Romsey home of the Mountbattens. But when he was 20, a small holding became available at Kilmerston Road, New Cheriton, and Les didn't hesitate. He'd spent most of his childhood out of doors and he couldn't wait to get back. Always close to his family, they and their friends would meet in any one of the village's three pubs, or in the Jolly Farmer and the Fox at Bramdean on the A272, so there was little need to stray further afield. His daily deliveries included dropping off the morning milk at Hinton Ampner House, where he befriended the butler, a Mr. Raven. He'd often invite me in for a tipple. It was a bit early for me, but he was very persuasive. He'd been Mr. Churchill's butler, so he was quite a personality. When war came, Les, in a reserved occupation, was exempt from military service, so he joined the Home Guard and was a member of the 30-strong Cheriton platoon for the duration. We met at the back of the HH Inn. We would drill and have weapons instruction and go out on exercises. And I tell you what, Dad's army got it spot on. One time, we had to rendezvous with some regular soldiers at 12, which we took as midnight. We were there, but they weren't. Next day at noon we got a call asking where the heck we were. By now I had 50 milkers, which later grew to 80, as well as beef cattle and up to 500 pigs. In fact, I sent 30 or 40 pigs to Winchester Market most weeks. In the early 1950s, Les, now wed to Kath, took on the tenancy of Black House Farm on the Hinton Ampner estate of Ralph Dutton, later Lord Sherburne. "He was a lovely chap, an absolute gentleman," said Les, whose animals won him many prizes at Alsford Show. He and Kath were also founder members of Alsford Wine Circle. In the late 1970s, in an early example of diversifying, they opened their home for supper evenings. With Les as butler, waiter and washer-up, and Kath as cook, they would entertain parties of up to 18 with wonderful farmhouse food. They never needed to advertise, word of mouth was enough, and they'd be booked up for months ahead. It was a lot of work, but we loved it. We made more from that than we did from farming, laughed Les. Kath died in 1993, and Les decided to give up the farm after 41 years, moving to sheltered accommodation in Ellingham Close, Alsford, where he lives today. He was driving until 1998, but when he could no longer read a number plate, he sold his car and got a buggy, which he used to get into the town. "It's been a wonderful life, and I've never been idle," said Les, clutching a telly message from the Queen and a balloon with "Happy 100th birthday" on it, and surrounded by a host of nephews, cousins and friends at his 100th birthday bash on Monday.
Former City MP Sir Morgan dies, aged 98. Former Winchester MP Rear Admiral Sir Morgan Morgan-Giles has died, aged 98. He represented the city from 1964, when he contested a by-election following the death of Peter Smithers, until 1979, when he was succeeded by John Brown. Sir Morgan joined the Royal Navy in 1932 and was mentioned in dispatches four times. In September 1941, he was awarded the George Medal for gallantry and undaunted devotion to duty during bomb disposal work in Egypt. At the end of a war during which he was recruited by Fitzroy Maclean to run arms to Tito's partisans in Yugoslavia, he was awarded a DSO for courage, outstanding leadership and devotion to duty. From 1964, on the benches at Westminster, such feats saw him greeted by affectionate Labour cries of "Send a gunboat!" Although he moved away from the area in his later years, Sir Morgan kept close links with Winchester, where several members of his family still live. His son Rodney farms at Old Alsford. Current Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "I was very sad to hear of the passing of the Rear Admiral, who, even today, is a hard act to follow in this job. I still find people who remember him in Winchester and speak fondly of his tenure as the local MP."
2 pints of lager and a tin of beans. A village pub is serving more than just drinks. The Northbrook Arms in East Stratton has opened a village shop, selling newspapers, groceries, fresh fruit, vegetables and meat, including local farmers' produce. With villagers having to make a 4-mile round trip to buy a tin of beans, landlady Millie Spur and her partner John decided to serve the community and boost the pub's trade by starting a shop. Winchester City Council granted planning permission for the new village store based in a wooden outbuilding in the pub grounds. The couple have applied for a grant from Hampshire County Council to pay for new equipment such as freezers and fridges. Ms Spur, 29, who took over the pub about a year ago, said, "We opened the shop because there isn't one at all in the village, and it's annoying if you run out of something like a tin of beans. We stock a lot of products anyway for our pub meals and our members of Hampshire Fair. The shop can take orders for next day delivery. It's an added benefit for the village and hopefully will encourage more people to visit the pub."
Teenage star gets call for Canada. A teenager from Winchester has been called up to play for England's lacrosse under-19 squad when it tours Canada, where the game originated later this summer. St Swithin's sports scholar Emily Sambrook-Smith has been selected to play in a team for England, whose first side will be in Ontario for the 2013 Lacrosse World Cup. The 16-year-old also scored 5 goals when she played for England under-19, helping them with the under-19 home internationals tournament at Surrey Sports Ground in March. "Ever since I started lacrosse at the age of 12, I have aspired to play for England and travel around the world doing what I love. Going on tour to Canada is a dream come true, especially as England is such a hugely respected lacrosse team. Although it is tough work with lots of extra fitness and training, it always pays off, and representing England is the most incredible experience I have ever had. I feel honoured to be part of such a friendly and dedicated team. I found the home internationals very emotional, and singing the national anthem made me feel extremely patriotic and proud of myself and those around me for making it to this level," said Emily from Kingsworthy. The school's head of sport, Justin McKenzie, described her as a true role model, adding, "Emily is one of the most dedicated and hard-working lacrosse players I have coached. She is a selfless player who always strives to improve as an individual and within the team unit. And there is a photo of Emily in her full kit off to Canada.
Tracking down rail memories. Museum chiefs are looking for people's railway reminiscences for a new exhibition in Hampshire. Romsey's King John's House and Heritage Centre is staging a summer-long display about the Spratt and Winkle line, which closed almost 50 years ago. We are keen to track down anyone who has reminiscences of working on or using the line, and we'd like to include their memories in our exhibition, said the King's John House manager, Anne James. The branch line, which ran between Redbridge in Southampton and Andover, opened on March the 6th, 1865, and was a victim a century later of the Beeching Report, which led to the axing of hundreds of rural branch lines across the UK. The last passenger train ran on the Spratt and Winkle on September the 7th, 1964. Freight trains continued to use the line for another 3 years, but in 1968 the demolition gangs started ripping up the track. Large sections of the old track bed between Mottisfont and Andover now form part of the 44-mile Testway footpath. Rail buff and sign writer Rod Hoyle is helping to put together the exhibition, which runs from May the 28th to the end of August, and he will be giving a talk at King's John's House on June the 5th at 10:30 a.m. Anyone who has memorabilia on the Spratt and Winkle is asked to get in touch with King John's House on 01794 512200.
Is your village the best around? A zest for community life and dedication to building a beautiful neighbourhood are among the qualities being sought for in the hunt for Hampshire's best village. Entries are now being accepted in the 2013 Fuller Hampshire Village of the Year competition from any parish council, community group or group of individuals representing their community. Judges will be singling out three crucial areas of rural life. The Community Transport and Access to Services category is on the lookout for those who have improved transport links in the community and helped people get use better access services. The pub, as the village hub, invites entrants to tell judges why their pub is an asset to residents. And supporting wildlife is the final category. And entries will be asked to tell how they have been supporting and improving biodiversity, encouraging learning and or improving facilities between people and nature. Entries must be received by Friday, August the 2nd. Judging for finalists will take place during the week beginning Monday, August the 12th. The winner receives £500, a brass plaque and flowers. The best in category winners receive a certificate and £200, while the best small village receives £200 and a certificate. There will also be a presentation for Inspirational Individual.
And this is Tabletops Bonnie's Abbey House Visit. When the Queen visited Winchester in 1954, she was presented with a stool for her children, Prince Charles and Princess Anne. It had been carved by James Laverty, who also carved a replica of the round table housed in the Great Hall. That replica has been in Abbey House since 1987, when the then Mayor, Major Douglas Covell, accepted it on behalf of the city. The present Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, was delighted to welcome Bonnie Balcombe, the great-granddaughter of James Laverty, to tea at Abbey House. Bonnie was pleased to see the table in situ. She has all the provenance of her family to authenticate the gifts given to the city. James was also the carver of the Black Oak Swan, which has been prominent in Winchester High Street for many years. Bonnie said, "It is a real thrill for me to see my ancestors' work still in use and still appreciated. So many original artefacts are lost or destroyed. At least I know that one of them remains." And there is a lovely photograph of James, of Bonnie Balcombe with Frank Pearson, the mayor, sitting at the table, which is about 4 feet across and beautifully carved to represent the round table.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editor, Tom Williams, Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Sheila Shepherd.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Goodbye and have a good week.